I think the conflict will end. I think gasoline prices will come back to where they were or perhaps lower. As they did, President Trump has shown that he is good at getting energy prices down.
And by down, of course, he means getting them up.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling there's something right.
It ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, an all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Welcome back to the Bradcast. As the madness continues, on the other hand, it is, well, that time of the month again. As we turn to our friends Digby and Driftglass on our monthly-ish basis these days, or whenever things get so insane and out of control that we could use some help feeling the ground under our feet again, which somehow they are always, they always manage to help us do. They are indeed standing by to join slash save us momentarily. No pressure, guys. The amount of madness that has played out since we last spoke to them just a few short weeks ago is frankly impossible to list. So we will see what we end up chatting about with them today. Sometimes it's as much up to them as me, but in any event, first let's get caught up very quickly on a few items of note since yesterday's show and on into today before they join us to try and help us make sense of it all, or some of it anyway. First up, the longest federal government shutdown in history has been going on for so long now that most of you probably even forgot that it was going on at all. It is now coming, well, mostly to an end, as Republicans agreed on Thursday to do what Democrats had been trying to do for months now. They agreed to reopen and refund the Department of Homeland Security, which has been closed for a record 75 days, and fund all of its agencies, including FEMA, the Coast Guard, the TSA, the Secret Service, et cetera, except for ICE and Customs and Border Protection, which Dems are still demanding new guardrails for before they will fund those agencies. And in any event, they are being funded still anyway, already, thanks to nearly $100 billion carved out for those two agencies last year in Trump's so-called Big Beautiful Bill. Republicans vow to restore regular funding to ICE and CBP in a reconciliation bill later, which allows them to bypass the Senate filibuster entirely. We will see if the Senate parliamentarian allows them to do so. The grim fallout gets underway or continues today following the corrupted activist U.S. Supreme Court's decision published on Wednesday in Louisiana versus Calais to completely ignore the Civil War era 15th Amendment's ban on abridging the right to vote due to race in order to gut almost all that was left standing of the landmark Civil Rights Act of 1965. You might want to stop by our newly redesigned bradblog.com to listen to my interview yesterday with Common Cause National Redistricting Director Dan Vicuña for much more on this if you missed yesterday's program. But on Thursday, before the ink was even dry on the corrupt decision in Calais, Louisiana's Republican Governor Jeff Landry announced that he will postpone next month's primary in the state. Early voting was set to begin, I think, this weekend, if I'm not mistaken, in order to allow Republican state lawmakers to adopt a new congressional map that eliminates one or both of the state's majority black U.S. House districts now that racial gerrymandering is apparently fully legal again, thanks to the Supreme Court. Louisiana's population is one-third black, but state Republicans went to the Supremes in Calais to overturn mandates of the Voting Rights Act that had required them to have two U.S. House districts out of six in the state in which minority voters had a chance of electing representatives of their choosing. That will now most likely change to ensure only Republicans can be elected to Congress in the state of Louisiana. In one single day on Wednesday, both chambers of the Republican gerrymandered state legislature in Florida passed its previously planned new congressional district map that could net Republicans four new House seats there, despite the state constitution, which explicitly bars partisan redistricting in the Sunshine State. But neither the law nor the constitution mean much down there in Florida anymore under GOP rule, apparently. And in Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, Tennessee, and South Carolina, top GOP candidates, elected officials, and party chairs, according to Politico, quote, called for special legislative sessions to dismantle minority-majority districts and create more aggressive gerrymanders benefiting their party. For their part, the Democratic governors of New York and Illinois, states where Democrats hold legislative trifectas, announced that they will take steps in response to redraw their maps to combat the GOP's gerrymanders, though it remains unclear if that can be done before the 2026 election. In New York, Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul announced on Wednesday that she is, quote, working with the legislature to change New York's redistricting process so we can fight back against Washington's attempt to rig our democracy. Currently, New York uses an independent commission to draw its congressional maps and would need to pass a ballot measure to amend that process, similar to what Democrats in California out here and Virginia out east did. If successful, Democrats could extract at least four more seats out of the Empire State, according to an analysis by the down ballot. Again, whether that can be done prior to 2026 remains in doubt, at least to me. And according to Emily Singer at Daily Kos, in Illinois, Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker told reporters that he and the Democratic-controlled legislature are looking at ways to respond in kind to the GOP's attempt to draw their way to a House majority this year. Currently, Republicans hold just three of Illinois' 17 House seats, and Dems could conceivably come up with a map that includes zero GOP lawmakers. We'll ask Driftglass about that momentarily out in Illinois. Quote, we're not going to stand for it in Illinois, Governor Pritzker vowed. We're going to push back. We have options for pushing back. And that is under discussion with the legislature even today. Indeed, Illinois Democratic State Senate President Don Harmon announced that the legislature is scrapping plans to vote to codify the Voting Rights Amendment into state law because doing so could hamstring them from being able to draw their maps in a way that combats the GOP gerrymanders elsewhere in this ongoing race to the bottom. Beyond that, and other than try and rally the troops to turn out a blue wave election this November that can somehow overcome the GOP's Supreme Court-aided authoritarian takeover of our democracy, it remains unclear what the Democratic plan is so far to respond in the longer term to all of this and otherwise somehow, eventually, maybe roll back the far-right activism of the corrupted high court, though New York's progressive Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez answered a few questions about exactly that from reporters after the horrific Calais ruling was handed down by the Supremes on Wednesday.
I have long felt that we all have to play by the same set of rules. And the Republican caucus has made it very clear that they want and are setting rules of partisan gerrymandering. The Democratic caucus has tried to pass nonpartisan gerrymandering for 10 years. Republicans have rejected it. And so we have to all abide by the same rules. And so if Republicans are going to redraw North Carolina, if they're going to redraw Texas, if they're going to redraw and gerrymander every one of their states, then unfortunately, we have to provide balance to that until we get to the day where we can all finally agree to put this behind us and pass nonpartisan gerrymandering federally.
Well, I think she means nonpartisan redistricting federally, but you get the gist. In a bit of campaign news on the Democratic side of the Senate aisle on Thursday, Maine's Democratic Governor Janet Mills has dropped her primary bid to become the Democratic nominee for the U.S. Senate this year to take on one of the most vulnerable Republicans seeking re-election this year. That would be Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine. Governor Mills cited a lack of campaign funds in her primary contest against popular political newcomer and oyster farmer Graham Plattner, who almost no one had heard of about a year ago and who has since upset some Democrats after it was discovered that he had a tattoo on his chest of what is widely recognized as a Nazi symbol, though Plattner says he had no idea at all that was the case and has since had it removed. Oil prices continued to spike on Thursday, at one point reaching $125 a barrel. That's up from about $70 a barrel before Trump took office in his second term. And that means the price of gas has also continued to skyrocket nationally, spiking more than 20 cents over the past 24 hours to about $4.30 a gallon, last I checked. It was less than $3 before Donald Trump began his ridiculously dumb and seemingly losing war against Iran, which continues to block about a fifth of the world's oil and natural gas supplies in the Strait of Hormuz, which is having a devastating effect around the world and, believe it or not, a more hopeful one as well, which we will discuss later this hour with Desi Doyen on our latest Green News Report. Hi, Des.
Hi. Yes, we will discuss that.
Something good to look forward to,
I guess.
Okay. Wall Street has reportedly come up with a new name for Trump. In the meantime, he is no longer Taco. Trump always chickens out. Instead, he is now Nacho. Not a chance Hormuz opens. That's actually pretty accurate. Don't blame me. Wall Street for that one. Trump's war has also succeeded in pushing inflation back up, we learned today here in the U.S., to 3.5% in March compared to 1 year earlier, though economists say that that is likely to get much worse as Trump's failure to resolve the war that he started continues. And as his approval numbers continue to tank, as we noted at the end of yesterday's show, new polling from Reuters, Ipsos found Trump's approval rating on the economy at just 27%. And his approval rating for his efforts on the cost of living, just 22% among all Americans. Numbers now lower than both Joe Biden and Jimmy Carter at the end of their respective terms in office. But hey, as disastrous as his now 2-month-old war might be, it did seemingly achieve its apparent main objective, at least for a while, of getting those allegations from the Epstein files that he raped and assaulted one or more 13-year-old girls off of the front pages. So it's not all bad. Since we last spoke with Digby and Driftglass on this program, among other things, Trump has been on a tear, firing his top cabinet members like Attorney General Pam Bondi, Secretary of DHS Kristi Noem, whose husband, speaking of inflation, was revealed to have a very strange sexual or genetic fetish proclivity. No judgment here, just noting it. Fired. He has also fired both the U.S. Army Chief of Staff and the Secretary of the Navy in the middle of the biggest war in 2 decades and the biggest naval standoff since World War II. He has started a fight with the Pope for some reason. He has portrayed himself as Jesus Christ on his failing social media site. He easily survived another failed assassination attempt, this time at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. He used his weaponized DOJ to indict his former FBI director on even more absurd charges than the ones that were tossed out the last time, and has given aid to the nation about all of this by assuring us over and over and over again that the golden gilded ballroom that he plans to build at the White House will be the largest and the most expensive and the most beautiful and the most secure ballroom ever built anywhere in the world. So everything will be just fine. Joining us now, taking great comfort in that, I am certain, are our old friends, our old longtime OG blogger pals. First from out here in Los Angeles, Heather Digby Parton, award-winning columnist at Salon and proprietor of the daily of the beloved Digby's Hullabaloo blog, and the man known only as Driftglass, but occasionally as Bill. He is the co-host of the Professional Left podcast, produced each week from the cornfield resistance of what he and co-host Blue Gal describe as their beloved flyover country, Illinois. Welcome both of you back to the broadcast.
Oh, it's good to be back.
No one believes you. All right, so let's start here with that litany of woes for the U.S. and the world at this point that I just rambled through, including for Trump himself and his Republican Party. Heather Digby Parton, what is up with the ballroom? Why is he so obsessed with it? Do you have any clue what that is all about? In the middle of all of this, I'm serious, he keeps going back to that. What is that about?
Well, I mean, you know, I can give you a sort of pithy answer, you know, that he's, you know, building, you know, he's bored with being president and he just wants to, you know, do his side gig, which apparently is general contractor these days. Uh-huh. But the truth is that he's building himself a temple, and it's a temple to himself. He's even said that to people. He's on the record, or other people have said that he's told them that, you know, he's building it for him. And this is supposed to be his, you know, the great temple to the great Donald J. Trump, which is just a perfect, perfect metaphor for the overwhelming megalomania that we are seeing emerge from this guy. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it would make sense to some, you know, in some twisted way, if he was, you know, doing such a great job and was so beloved and had, you know, conquered the world or something, but he's losing all over the world. He's growing more and more hated by the day. So it kind of makes it really bizarre that he's obsessed with this temple.
Well, other people would be building his temple. You know, people would say, we need to build a temple to our great president, Donald Trump. That's not happening. And he even said, no one was going to do this for me. I have to do it for myself.
Yes.
So he's building the temple for himself. And if you look at it, if you look at the renderings of it, that's exactly what it is. And then, of course, he's got this, you know, this bunker underneath it, which apparently now is so incredibly, you know, important that the future presidents will never be able to leave the White House again because it's the only safe place for them to be, which is the ridiculous logic of this whole post-assassination attempt push for the ballroom, which was just, I mean, we all saw it. Within minutes, everybody was on the same page, from Meghan McCain to Rich Lowry to the whole crew, Laura Loomer, out there, you know, posting and talking about how we have to build the ballroom. This just proves it, because the president isn't safe going anywhere else.
Well, next time there's you know, primary elections in Iowa, what's nice is that it's large enough they can just bring the entire state out to the ballroom, apparently.
Mm-hmm. I guess. Just fit it right in there.
Driftglass, you want to ring in on this ballroom and why he possibly thinks America wants this, or that it is somehow going to, you know, I don't know, placate the country amid all of this? It seems so incredibly off key to the moment.
In my head, I have a vision of Hitler and Albert Speer designing Germania as the country loses the war.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a lunatic, and he wants exactly right. He's building a temple to himself. He's slapping his name on everything. And because this is the only way he's going to survive, you know, historically, he will die a bitter and hated old man. And if he leaves enough junk around and enough people around who will tell his story, I think he's hoping to outrace the facts of his reputation. Now, if he's willing to do the same deal as a pharaoh and take all of his retainers into the tomb with him, I'd be willing to make that deal. It's just grotesque. And there will be a great cry from people on the left to tear it all down.
Yeah.
Burn it to the ground and sell chunks of it to any, like the Berlin Wall. This was a horrible, horrible thing. And you can own a chunk of it for $99.95.
And by the way, your quip there about Hitler and Germania, that was a real thing, really. When the war was almost at its end in World War II, there was Hitler planning out this great this town with great monuments to him.
Yeah.
And it really does kind of look like that. All right. Well, listen, you guys. Yeah,
exercise.
Go ahead.
It's a self-soothing exercise.
Yes.
It's to make him feel better about himself.
Yes, he is a bottomless pit of need, and he's never going to be filled. America does not want the ballroom poll show, and Trump just does not care.
Now, you guys are both greater students of history than I am, of course, which is to say that I think you're both older than me, but 60 days.
Not much.
But 60 days into this thing, frankly, this war, now we're talking about the war since Trump succeeded in getting us to talk about the ballroom. 60 days, I see no way out of this war in Iran, and I'm kind of amazed that the nation and really the markets and the global economy don't yet really seem to have fully noticed or priced that in yet. And Trump seems to have completely lost interest in finding a solution to it. So my historical question, which I know sounds like a joke, I'll start with you, Driftglass, but this is an actual question. Is this the worst foreign policy blunder in the history of the U.S. that you are aware of?
I think it might well be. I mean, that this is, we've talked before, I know we've talked before on this show about this being stupid Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
It has all the elements. It has all the nonsense. But Iraq, they at least made an attempt to justify why they were doing this.
Mm-hmm.
They had the public with them. They had 9/11. They pimped the hell out of American tragedy. They waved the flag. And this was America had to do this because Saddam Hussein, 9/11. And it turned out that it was nothing to do with that. And the only ministry in Iraq that got guarded by anybody was the oil ministry. And all these jobs were parceled out to hacks and contributors. And it was a disaster. It was a long, rumbling disaster that most of the people who were involved with it have since said, what? Well, no, I never thought. No, mistakes were made. Let's move on, shall we? Let's move on to the future. This is all of that plus incredible stupidity compressed into 60 days or 90 days. Run by a depraved old man who's lost his mind and doesn't care, and a bunch of people around him who have no ability to control anything he does. So, yes, this is the dumbest war America has ever fought for any reason, in my humble opinion. And the invasion.
The dumbest war, but the dumbest foreign policy blunder, you know, add to it the Bay of Pigs, which is sort of famously, disastrous. I mean, this is just because you call it, 60 or 90 days and an old man that, no one won't listen to anyone. It kind of sounds like a joke, but that's actually what's going on. And 60 or 90, we're already at 60 days, 90 days. If we get out by 90, that'll be a huge success.
The bombing raid was the lightning and the thunder hasn't arrived yet.
Mm.
This is the after effect. That was all the flash when all of the oil that's been stockpiled begins to run out, as it already is, when the farmers where I live feel the effect of fertilizer costs going through the roof or becoming non-available, when people see price at the pump go to $5 a gallon, when they can't travel over the summer, that's when the thunder hits. And that's when it's like, what the hell did we just do? Why did we do this? And Trump just points at his blueprint and says, ballroom doing this, ballroom. At that point, I think people, how I'd like to use words precisely. I don't believe the thing, the nation or people, but I believe a staggeringly large majority of Americans, including people who voted for Donald Trump, will wonder out loud, how the hell do we get out of this?
Yeah.
And that's when people will have to start moving in the direction of doing an actual deal with the people who actually control the Strait of Hormuz, which will look an awful lot like the Obama deal, but much, much worse. So you've traded all of our alliances.
Yeah.
We traded all of our oil future. You've traded gas prices for nothing. And by the way, our stockpiles are now running out. We don't have bullets left.
Well, and this is
all of that for nothing.
And this is the problem, because he can't really do that. He can't really make a deal that is lesser than the Obama era deal, the JCPOA. He can't do that. And he, you know, can never admit to losing anything. So that's why I say, I think there is just no way out. As I understand it, there is some denial, or I guess belief, among those on the right that there's going to be some sort of magical solution to all of this. Heather, you heard at the top of the show there, I think that was Scott Bessent saying that the prices are going to come magically down.
It's all going to be fine. No problem.
And I think there is a belief that, you know, he'll somehow be able to declare a victory. The Strait will be open again. As it was before Trump's war, the economy is going to just start booming. All will be well, all in time for the November elections. Does that appear to be that the drug they're snorting at this point?
That's the magic Trump, you know, concept, which is out there, which is that, oh, don't worry, everything always goes his way. And it kind of does, you know, on a certain level, at least for him.
Mm-hmm.
He gets out of scrapes all the time and has his whole life. He even said that he gave a rally speech back in, I think it was during the first term, and he was awaiting the results, or they were looking at losing the 2018 election. And he finally admitted that, you know, well, we might not be able to pull this one off, but you know what? I'll do what I always do. I'll figure it out. It'll be fine. You know, that's his method, which is just, he doesn't have any real plans. He doesn't have a strategy. He doesn't understand by any means what's going on with this war. I mean, it's clear that he, and by the way, Pete Hegseth, who we've been watching for the last 2 days, make an utter fool of himself on national television. They're clueless. They don't actually even understand what's happened. I mean, two things that are really important coming out of this. Number one is, you know, whether or not we end up withdrawing and declaring victory or whatever, that doesn't mean anything. Because what's happened is that, number one, we did, institute a change, not a regime change, but we did change the old 86-year-old doddering guy for a young 56-year-old guy. We killed a bunch of his friends, wounded him, and, you know, he's much more hardline even than his father. So good job on that.
Killed his father and his wife as well, by the way.
Yeah, good job on that. That was really very helpful. Mm-hmm. Then the previous action that we took, in which we bombed out the, you know, allegedly obliterated the nuclear facilities. One of the things that people don't realize that we did then, we used the big, nasty bunker buster bomb, which was supposed to be just this side of a nuclear warhead. It was so powerful that no one would ever want to see such a thing used again. If we used it, and they used it once in Afghanistan during Trump's term, but this time they used it in a country where it was really going to hit some infrastructure. Turns out, well, guess what? Not that big a deal. So that's great. We've certainly, you know, we've revealed ourselves to be, you know, paper tigers in that regard. And then now the Strait of Hormuz, which has always loomed over this whole issue from the very beginning, going back to 1979. If Iran took control of the Strait of Hormuz, what would happen? And the, you know, it was always kind of out there, sort of a vague thing, which is, we don't want it to happen. It could be bad. And it was one of the primary reasons why the United States never fell for Bibi Netanyahu's pitch, which he's been pitching now for decades, that, oh, the Iranians are weak. We got to go in now. Got to hit them while we can, you know, do this whole idea. Trump's the first one that actually bought into it, because he was strutting around like, you know, he thought he was Alexander the Great after Venezuela and thought that he could do it. Well, now we've seen what's happened. Iran controls the Strait of Hormuz and will control the Strait of Hormuz going forward.
And that,
so they now have leverage that we never proved in the past that they had. So we've proved that Iran has leverage. We've proved that our bunker busters don't work that well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've proved that, yes, we can execute regime change, only we make it worse. So, you know, good job. Really, really excellent, excellent job on our part.
Nailed it.
And the
fact that he, thinks, I guess, there's some idea that he can, you know, declare victory and walk away once he gets bored, which he already is. The problem is, he can declare whatever he wants. That strait is not open. It doesn't matter what he declares. And by the way, if I'm Iran, and I know they know the elections are coming up in November, they're very, very smart. Go look at some of their Lego propaganda films, which are brilliant.
They're great.
Yeah. They know what's going on. They know the story. I see no reason at all that they would want to open the strait prior to November. I want to get to this voting rights stuff here. But Driftglass, anything else you care to say for the moment regarding the war before we turn to voting rights?
No, just there's a whole bunch of wars throughout history. Like Constantinople protected itself by controlling the Golden Horn with a giant chain. There's an awful lot of geography that goes into warfare. And anybody who studied anything to do with the Middle East knew that the Strait of Hormuz, if you pinch it off, you can stop the world. And I don't know why they did this, why they didn't know, if nobody just told them. But it was just singularly stupid on a cherry on top of a bunch of other stupid things.
I know. It's just, I mean, I don't know how many times you could say it's
you
stupid,
hate to laugh,
but it's really true. All right, let's try to fly through some of these real quick. Good luck to us all. Digby, your thoughts very briefly on the Calais ruling at the Supreme Court on Wednesday that appears to be all but the final nail in the Voting Rights Act coffin by the corrupt right-wing majority there, and what you think now needs to be done in its wake.
Well, you know, of course, you really, you know, laid out everything, I think, in your opening. I mean, it's absolutely catastrophic. I think we know that. What they hope to attain now is 12 minimum new seats. And as Brad Parscale, Trump's former campaign manager, tweeted after it happened, well, we will now own the House in perpetuity. And I think that's what has everybody terrified. I mean, the moral dimension of this is absolutely horrific. We've gone back to, you know, pre-Reconstruction days, basically. And we're going to have a situation in this country where the only Black people in the Congress will be from outside the South, which, considering the fact that one-third of all Black Americans are in the South, is an absolute disgusting outcome of this. And Trump is out there, you know, Hakeem Jeffries, who, by the way, is an African-American, you know, he had some harsh words for the Supreme Court and said it was illegitimate. Trump had a big meltdown today about how he tweeted that Jeffries is a low IQ individual who should not be allowed to talk that way about one of the greatest institutions anywhere in the world. This is a guy who just, what was it, 3 weeks ago, said that his own appointed Supreme Court justices, their families would be ashamed of them for what they've done and
yes,
all this in the
right.
wake. You know, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The guy, you know, I mean, just that's the kind of thing that's, I think, driving us all a little bit crazy. And the truth is that it is an illegitimate institution. I'm sorry. 5 out of the 6 Supreme Court justices who voted for this were nominated by a president who came into office without winning the popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
70% of Americans support the Voting Rights Act. The Supreme Court is incredibly unpopular. It's not a democratically legitimate institution.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Hakeem Jeffries is right. And something has to be done about that. As for what we do in the interim, you tell me, Brad, you're the expert on this one, and I don't have a clue.
No,
I don't know how to fix this.
I'm out of ideas myself. But I do notice that the coincidence that... I know it's just a coincidence, again, that pretty much I think 95-99% of all the people that Donald Trump regards as low IQ turn out to be, like Hakeem Jeffries, Black.
Weird,
I don't know what's up. That's weird. That's just a totally weird coincidence.
Total coincidence. There's no racism in this country. We just learned that from the Supreme Court.
It's
partisanship.
All right. So speaking of what to do about it, Drifty, I know that we discussed this a few months ago. This back at the beginning of the gerrymandering wars that Trump kicked off last summer. But after the voters in California and Virginia stood up at these special elections to set aside independent redistricting commissions in order to adopt new House maps to combat all of this, what has been done by largely GOP state legislatures, which simply enacted new gerrymanders. And then the Calais ruling at the Supreme Court on Wednesday, which could lead to GOP-controlled states wiping out dozens of majority-minority voting districts around the South. Where does all of this stand? in your home state of Illinois, where I keep hearing your governor, J.B. Pritzker, saying, well, we got to do something about this. Well, Dems have a trifecta out there, but they don't actually seem to be doing anything. We did our part here in California, Drift Glass. What's the state of the state out there in the land of Lincoln, my friend?
Well, let me just give you an example.
Yeah.
The district in which I now live, District 13, the Fightin' 13, didn't exist as it existed 4 years ago or 8 years ago. Well, there's already been an enormous amount of gerrymandering in Illinois. Our district was redrawn as it looks like a long, skinny, I don't know what, the nation of Cuba, an appendix, I'm not sure what to call
it. All the way across the state, yep.
Well, that's the 15th. The 15th is the one where Mary Miller is there. And that was literally, let's put all the Republicans in one place where we can keep an eye on them. And that's Mary, as we call her, Mary Nazi Miller, who's a hard right lunatic, and everyone knows it, but she keeps winning in that district. She keeps winning with, I think she ran unopposed last time. That's how, and the problem is there just aren't enough places to put Republicans to keep them harmless. You know, there are just too many of them downstate. But our district was redrawn specifically to create a Democratic district, and now we have one with Nikki Baczynski. But before that happened, we had Republican, Republican, Republican. So I think they've gone almost as far as they can, but I've seen maps that just look like slivers of glass coming out of Chicago, extending downstate like a shattered window.
Yeah, that's what they should do at this point. Yeah. That's what they should do.
I agree.
And I hate saying it. I ain't proud of it, but it is what we're dealing with what we have to deal with. And it seems to me that Chicago or Illinois keeps talking about it. Pritzker keeps talking about it. Is there a holdup?
It's
partisanship.
That's all it is. And that's fine. Haven't you heard? That's okay.
Well, exactly. No, that is what it is. So will they actually do it? Pritzker's been saying it since last summer. We're looking at it. Are they looking? Mm-hmm. I mean, where are we? Is it going to happen
I believe he's looking at it. You know, I'm off his speed dial now, so he doesn't consult me directly.
Well, he should.
But my understanding is that there is a great deal of desire on the part of Democrats in this state to carve up the state as much as possible to make as few Republican seats as possible. And I believe that they're just like, no, because Pritzker's been very clear about Donald Trump since he was elected. And he's been heroic as far as we're concerned in standing up to him, in getting things done here, in pushing, making sure that when ICE comes to town, we stand up to them and so forth. So it is in his character to do everything possible. And I don't know if they have the votes to do it. I mean, Democratic trifecta, it doesn't mean that we get to do anything we want, but it's within our reach. And I if he's listening to this podcast, I strongly urge him to move forward on a redistricting this. And then first thing Democrats do is what they did in 2019, reintroduce for the People Act one more time.
Yep.
AOC was right. We don't want to have partisan gerrymandering. This is the weapon of our enemies. And so I would say, go ahead and do it, put it on a 5-year track and come back and say, now let's get over this nonsense and put back in place a rational way of allocating congressional districts nationwide. Republicans will reject it, and then we'll be right back to where we are. But, you know, it sort of preserves your integrity while playing the fight that that we don't want to have, but have been forced upon us.
Okay, I got to get to a break here. I want to come back, and Heather Digby Parton and Drift Glass, and of course Desi Doyen, will all still be sticking with us here for one more segment. When I ask about this stupid Comey indictment, this stupid threat against Jimmy Kimmel. We'll see what we have time for. And if you're keeping track at home, you may have noticed that Drift Glass has already mentioned, if I have it right, Constantinople, Germania, Alexander the Great. Stick around to find out what the next Arcane Deep Cut will be right here on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. about that. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Our monthly-ish roundtable continues with Heather Digby Parton, Driftglass, and of course Desi Doyen with a Green News report coming up momentarily. Want to hit a couple of quick questions here for the panel. Trump's former Republican FBI director James Comey was indicted yet again this week by his Trump's weaponized DOJ after his previous revenge indictment for supposedly lying to Congress was tossed out after a judge determined that Trump's personal insurance lawyer was not actually lawfully seated as the U.S. attorney in Virginia. This time, it was in response to a photo that Comey took of seashells found on the seashore about a year ago, spelling out 8647, 8647. Driftglass, any more likelihood that this revenge indictment will stick and that Trump will finally be able to jail one of his political opponents? And by the way, why does he see the former Republican FBI director as a political opponent in the first place? Just by way of reminder, because he's got so many of them.
Yeah, I think they finally got him there, Brad. Yeah, this will nail it down. I've never seen a more pristine, well put together case made against anybody. Definitely on the ropes now. No, he'll walk into court. It'll be laughed out of court, and once again he'll. And I think it's simply because anyone who isn't kissing his boots is an enemy, and he beat him once, and that cannot stand. You know, this aggression will not stand. We cannot let our political opponents think they can beat us. So no matter what you have to do, go get him. And I think that's the order that has gone out to every one of his minions.
But if he's going to be laughed out of court, it seems like it doesn't work, which brings me to the question I have for Heather. You made an interesting point in your column today at Salon on this. You write, quote, "This is exactly the kind of charge the president wanted to see, one so personal and obviously retributive that no one could possibly mistake it for blind justice. He wants to bring charges that are so obviously ridiculous and bogus." Can you explain that to me, Heather?
Yes. Yes. He wants, this is sending a message. You know, you hit me, I hit you back twice as hard, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. This whole mob thing with this particular case just kind of is amazing. Trump is out there today and said it before, that, you know, this is a mafia thing. He's a dirty cop and he's using mafia language. Can I just point out, 86 is not a mafia term.
Right.
The term is deep six. I gotta deep six him, you know, deep six, you know,
yes.
Santino over there. It's not 86. 86 from restaurant term.
Exactly.
Or tossing somebody out of a bar, you know. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, he
but
runs
case,
a lot
yeah.
of restaurants allegedly
so, yeah.
with mobsters, so it's easy
yeah.
for him
maybe
to confuse the
he
two.
He got confused, as he so often does, yeah. yeah. So, no, I mean, it's ridiculous. This is purely a personal vendetta. He wants people to know it's a personal vendetta, and he's just going to go after him. And he doesn't, I don't think he cares if they toss it out. I mean, he'll do it again. In fact, I just read a headline that the DOJ says they're still investigating Comey for, you know, classified information. They're pushing that thing.
And they also so, know the that every single time he goes after somebody, he demonstrates, hey, look, you know, maybe I'll lose in court, but it's going to cost you to fight in court.
You'll
and if
pay.
You're not wealthy like Comey is, then that can probably be a very chilling on speech for people who aren't rich.
You bet. You bet it is. Like Cassidy Hutchison, there's a good example of one who's
yes.
going to really suffer for that.
Seems to me like it's more like he doesn't have the, you know, the foresight of a goldfish that
True.
He sees this as a success today. Never mind what happens last week when I look like a jackass and it's all tossed out.
Or tomorrow.
Right.
Yes.
Speaking of failing and trying again, Trump's FCC is again trying to cancel culture, I guess, ABC's Jimmy Kimmel by threatening to revoke the licenses of, I think, 8 major ABC-owned stations around the country because Jimmy told a joke last week about 2 days before an alleged would-be assassin was stopped trying to get into the White House Correspondents' Dinner where Trump was set to speak. Here was that joke.
Our First Lady Melania is here. Look at Melania. So beautiful. Mrs. Trump, you have a glow like an expectant widow.
Not a bad joke, actually. Kind of cute. And again, it was before the assassination attempt. So, Digby, go back to you here. Will the FCC really be able to take away the licenses from ABC-owned stations over this? When, by the way, no station anywhere, as far as I know, has ever had its license revoked for any reason since the inception of the FCC.
I have no idea if they'll be able to do it. They might do it. And then, of course, it goes to court and blah, blah, blah. But it does appear that ABC and Disney are going to fight this, that they're not going to take it lying down. Kimmel doesn't say they're not firing Kimmel. They're not doing any of the things that, you know, happened the last time. So, I suspect that this may go through the process that we have to go through for everything now, in which case Trump abuses his power. His administration does something horrible. It goes through court. It takes months and blah, blah, blah. Winds up in front of the Supreme Court. And then, you know, I don't know, they wake up on the wrong side of the bed and, you know, we end up losing the Voting Rights Act or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one way or another. I think it's probably going to go through the process. They're going to try to do this because this is part of the old, you know, the Project 2025 Viktor Orban playbook that they're still kind of, you know, playing off of.
Driftglass, do you get the sense that company, even, you know, these large companies that aren't falling for that old playbook anymore, that this is not going to work, not just with ABC, but with all of these others, that frankly, you know, Trump's day in the sun is kind of over at being able to bully people like this?
I think corporations are really good at putting a finger up in the wind and figuring out which way it's blowing. And it's currently, this guy is doomed. He's losing his minions. His influencers are turning on him. Nick Fuentes is saying mean things about him. Tucker Carlson's walking away. All kinds of reports about dissatisfied voters who are also viewers of television programs. And I think it's like they're testing the water to see how safe it is to tell the dear leader no. And every time Trump loses, and he's racked up a staggeringly impressive record of losing, it
more
shows
well,
them
losing
that
like no one has ever seen before.
He's more right. Losing than you would ever believe.
That's
it's
right.
So he's the best at losing.
Yes,
really, he's the best at losing.
Yes,
the greatest.
And winner. Every time he loses, you know, it's like the little bit of power leaks away, and it's a little bit safer to call him on it. And the more he loses, the better it is for people who don't have the courage of their conviction, but really don't want to go along with somebody bullying them out of firing an employee.
I don't know. I've got only a minute here, so I have to get a quick response from all of you here. I don't think that Trump is doing well, you know, politically, obviously, but physically, mentally, emotionally. He really does kind of seem to be going mad before our eyes, which, you know, maybe brings us back to his obsession with the ballroom. Is it even conceivable, Driftglass, that Trump survives for three more years at this rate? And I don't mean that he's necessarily dead, but, you know, that he stays in office, that he can stick with this. And if he does, who will be more insane by that point, him or us?
Well, all men are mortal. Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. I see him running downhill real fast. It's possible they just dope him up, like Professor Gill in the Star Trek episode about the, you know, Nazi planet. And they just keep him doped up. You know, weekend at Donnie's, you know, they keep him around. They roll him out for events, and his staff just looks after him. That's quite possible. It won't fool anyone. You can't induce the ability to speak the language, and he's just getting worse and worse. But I think that we are going to have to hold each other very close for the next couple of years.
Yes.
It's going to get very bad.
It just seems inconceivable that either he or we could make it for three more years of this, Heather.
It's 32 months. That's what we've got to go.
But
and
who's counting?
You know, I'm counting them down. Yeah. Who's counting? But yeah, I'm buying Driftglass's take on this. I think it's likely. I think he's already there. I think it's pretty clear that he's not completely, you know, he's pretty non-compos menace a good part of the time. as long as he's talking, he's not sleeping when the cameras are rolling. So I think they let him talk because they figure that that's maybe better.
Keep him awake.
To keep him awake. That's where we're at.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to when he falls asleep while he's talking. That'll be fun.
It could happen. I mean, it will happen, I think.
And with two more deep cuts there from for Socrates and Star Trek, we have got to get out. Thanks, guys. My thanks to Heather Digby Parton. Find her work at salon.com, Digby's blog. .net. And of course, on the blue skies at Digby56, you will find Driftglass over at proleftpod.com or on his blog, driftglass.blogspot.com, for a lot of deep cuts. You will also find him on the blue skies at merely Driftglass. I look forward to speaking to you both very soon. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, do we have time for a break
or
GNR, or do we go straight to GNR?
Actually, no, I think we should go straight to it.
Let's do it. It's our latest Green News Report.
The Strait of Hormuz will never reopen in the way that it did at the beginning.
Iran war, global oil crisis has changed the fossil fuel industry forever, experts say. Big Oil is reaping a huge windfall from consumers thanks to the Iran war.
Thanks, Iran war.
Plus,
it is both a climate and an economic issue. And that is why reducing our dependency on fossil fuels is so overdue.
At conference to phase out fossil fuels, France commits to ditching all oil, gas, and coal by 2050.
Thanks, Iran war. All of those stories and more straight ahead from brandblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The U.S. oil market is open for business, and it is booming. Big Oil just had its biggest payday in history.
Boom. Hey, Jesse Waters, you realize even your viewers on Fox News might not think that's good news. This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. My God, Desi Doyen, is there nothing that Jesse Waters won't do for love? What do you got for us today?
Well, first, as the Iran war grinds on with no apparent resolution, there's almost no movement through the Strait of Hormuz, with 20% of the world's oil and gas and 30% of its fertilizer still locked up. This week, the United Arab Emirates announced that on May 1st, it will leave OPEC, the oil cartel that has largely controlled global oil supplies for decades. The move strips the cartel of its third largest producer and further weakens its leverage over global oil prices. Analysts say the UAE's exit will not ease the oil supply crunch, but it will allow the tiny Gulf nation to increase its production at will to sell as much as it can, as fast as it can, as the world shifts away from fossil fuels.
A little favor there to the Trump administration, it sounds like.
Yep. In an interview with The Guardian, the head of the International Energy Agency, Fatih Birol, the world's leading energy economist, said that the global oil crisis triggered by the Iran war has changed the fossil fuel industry forever, pushing even more countries to turn away from fossil fuels to secure homegrown domestic energy supplies.
Thanks, Donald Trump.
Bloomberg News reports that the oil supply shock is hitting hard in Asia, where most countries rely significantly on oil deliveries from the Middle East. The prolonged shutdown of the strait is draining their oil and gas reserves, forcing governments to enact energy-saving measures like reducing air conditioning. That is colliding with a brutal early-season humid heat wave sweeping across Southeast Asia, making work in office buildings almost unbearable. Temperatures in India hit 117 degrees Fahrenheit this week. But Big Oil is profiting handsomely from Donald Trump's war on Iran, reaping a huge windfall from consumers.
Right.
AP reports that oil giant BP's profits more than doubled in the first quarter of this year, thanks to the war pushing oil and gas prices to new highs.
Well, that's the important thing.
BP pulled in more than $3 billion in pure profit between just January and March. CNN reports that six of the world's biggest fossil fuel companies are on track to make almost $3,000 in profits every single second this year.
Once again, thanks, Donald Trump.
Finally, the first global conference on transitioning away from fossil fuels concluded this week in Santa Marta, Colombia, focused on crafting plans to phase out fossil fuels outside of formal UN climate talks. High-level officials from 57 nations repeatedly cited how the Iran war has exposed the economic costs and national security vulnerabilities of dependence on fossil fuels and the need to shield their economies against fossil fuel price shocks.
Good.
One of the biggest barriers to phasing out fossil fuels remains lack of financing to developing countries to make the shift. A new report on global energy subsidies and incentives released at the conference found that in 2024, renewable energy globally received just $250 billion in government subsidies, whereas fossil fuels received $1.2 trillion in subsidies. Man. And in a major announcement, France committed to completely phase out its use of coal by 2030, oil by 2045, and natural gas by 2050. Here's European Union Climate Commissioner Wiebke Hoekstra.
We in Europe are losing half a billion euros each day this war continues. But the effects are everywhere. And we already had a very good reason to move on for climate action with transitioning away. We now also have it for commercial reasons and for reasons of independence.
Well done, France. Keep up the good work. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. It's newly designed. You'll like it. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. I don't know. I'm out of gas. Got to get out. Thanks again to our guests, Heather Digby Parton and Drift Glass. And, of course, to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other since the beginning of time, download it for free at bradblog.com. And, hey, while you're there, please consider hitting one of those donate buttons, one of our easy-to-fill-out forms to help us stay on your public airwaves. A one-time donation, or better yet, a monthly subscription, is tremendously appreciated and needed. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. On the social medias, I am TheBradBlog, and Desi is
Green News Report.
We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world!
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.